Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Joel Hargis, an instrument-rated private pilot who flies regularly around Florida and the Southeast for business in his Mooney. Joel is EAA Chapter 534 President and Young Eagle Coordinator promoting aviation.
Hello, I'm Joel Hargis with the Florida Aviation Network, and we're here at Sun and Fun 2023. It's Saturday today. It's a beautiful day. And I would encourage if you're watching and have an opportunity to get out here to do that, because this place is, it's just beautiful this year. The grounds are in great shape and lots of airplanes and good stuff going on. But I don't want to talk too much about that because I have an incredible guest here today. It's such an honor to interview this guy, kind of a long time, kind of a legend in aviation. And we only got about 20 minutes, and we're never going to get through it all in 20 minutes. I mean, sitting down, I feel very fortunate to be able to interview Sean Knickerbocker.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And so, you know, like I say, this guy is somewhat a legend because he's done it all. I mean, when I say done it all, I mean done it all. So let's start with, this guy is a Wright Brothers Award winner. For those who don't know, that's an flying for 50 years or more without any problems, basically, right?
Yes, and that is correct.
What year did you get your Wright Brothers Award, Sean?
2019.
19.
So I soloed at 14.
You soloed at 14.
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
The gliders.
Ah, there you go.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Soloed in Miami, born and raised in Miami. Soloed with Mary Gaffney.
Mary Gaffney. I don't know who that is.
The first world champion women's glider, aerobatic pilot from Miami.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
This is back in the 60s.
So you soloed at 14, Sean. I assume what? Soloed fixed wing at 16, licensed at 17?
Yeah, and then moved on and got my ratings, grew up in Miami, and then went to college on a football scholarship. A little sabbatical on flying and stuff, and then, you know, did all kinds of stuff in college. Was a park ranger for the Blue Ridge Parkway with the National Park Service in my college years and Everglades National Park. Then went in the military, and then it progressed from there.
So, it goes on, and I'm going to back up just a little bit. You say you got your ratings. You are a you single... Multi.
Yeah, I got to think here. Wait a second here. ATP, single engine land and sea, airplane, multi-engine land and sea, rotorcraft helicopter, then commercial glider, and then I hold all the CFIs for airplane, helicopter, and glider, and a ground instructor, been an examiner for 38 years, and I'm working on a new rating.
Really? What's left?
Hot air balloon.
Oh.
Hardest rating to get.
Is that right?
Yeah, I ended up buying two hot air balloons. And, you know, but the wind's over 7 miles an hour. They don't want you to fly. That's what the POH or the AFM says.
Right.
So they must know something. And I know what they know, because takeoff's not a problem.
Yeah.
Landings are like riding a Bronco. Tell me about it. And if you don't have the right condition, the field, long... you could have some issues, but I'm working on it. So eventually, you know, they say the instructor, the student becomes the instructor, then the instructor becomes the student. And that's true. It's a full circle.
Right.
So.
And so not only do you hold all those ratings, but you have an ATP in all those ratings.
That's correct. Yeah.
Which is the top level airline transport pilot in all of those, which honestly, I've never met anyone that had all of those ratings at ATP.
Yeah, I'm also a Canadian ATP all-rating pilot, too. So, and an ABI, an aerobatic instructor for Canada and gliders. So
like I say, what an incredible background. I mean, like I say, I'm pretty tickled to just be sitting here with you.
And it's been a great career.
You think?
Yeah, it's lengthy, and I don't really boast about it, but I did expert witness litigation for 35 years, worked for the Department of Justice, the Admiralty Litigation Branch in Washington, protecting the U.S. government from lawsuits. And then I worked with individual lawyers, did some big cases So you're familiar with the NASCAR, right?
Sure.
Ever heard of Bobby Allison?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I did the accident that killed his son, Davey Allison.
That was a helicopter crash.
Yeah, it was an MD-500 in Talladega. And so that was, I did that accident. I did a lot of other unique, some specialty government operation accidents in South America involving a caravan and things of that nature, in which the surviving guys were captured by the FARC and was held for about 7 years. They just released them a couple of years ago. A lot of them live here in Florida now.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a tremendous, you know, there's just so much there in aviation. And anybody that wants to be a pilot, it's wide open. It is. And I always say, make a hobby into a profession and you'll never get tired of it. So I'm on 57 years of flying, just went over 25,000 hours, and I still fly. I enjoy it.
And that's incredible, and what an inspiration. So with all of those ratings and everything, what do you enjoy flying the most? Could you narrow it down to maybe two or three?
Sailplanes, gliders.
Really?
Yeah, I fly a DG-1000. It's a high-performance, two-place, 20-meter. About 60 meters and feet, sometimes a little slow, but it's an open class glider. 47-1 is the L over D, lift over drag. So that means every 47 feet I travel, I drop 1 foot, or every 47 miles I travel, I drop 1 mile, or whatever the combination, whatever the unit you're measuring by. But we fly from Seminole Lake Glider Port all the way down to Lake Okeechobee, Avon Park, all the way up north towards Lake City in an afternoon by using Mother Nature and thermals associated with the cumulus clouds.
Absolutely. So have you ever competed racing cross-country and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I just finished, it took me a year and a half. I just wrote the Soaring Society of America Master Cross-Country Instructor Pilot Program. I run that program, and... It's a document about 60 some odd pages. It kind of lays the basic on how to fly cross country, because most people get their glider rating. There's no regulatory or rule requirement by the FAA to do cross country. It's
right.
Just you get the rating and that's it. You have to learn cross country on yourself. So the Soaring Society of America promotes flight training and safety, and what we try to do is get more people, younger people, in aviation. You know, I used to fly warbirds, and, well, I kind of still do, but you get on the ramp out here at Sun and Fun, anybody gets out of a PBY or a B-17 or anything like that, they're 65 years old or plus. We need young people in aviation.
Oh, yeah.
And it's wide open.
Well, and I think I had mentioned I do a series teaching youth aviation. I think that's very important. And so gliders, you know, Seminole Glider, that's Groveland, Florida.
Yes.
I've been thinking about going down there and maybe getting a glider rating.
You get your glider rating. You know, glider rating will enhance your piloting skills 20-fold. So
20-fold.
I can tell you two major air carrier accidents, both everybody survived because they were glider pilots.
No kidding.
What's the one in New York?
Sully.
Sully,
yeah.
Okay, glider pilot.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Ah, ever heard of the Gimli glider?
Nope.
Air Canada 767. About 25 years ago, ran out of fuel because they got liters and pounds mixed up.
Ooh.
Whole bunch
of
people.
That's a big difference.
Had a whole bunch of people on. Well, he landed on an old drag strip in Gimli, Canada up there. I think it's in British Columbia. It was an old RAF base, and he was an RAF pilot. He was a glider pilot. So a 767 with no engines and no nothing, he has a little rat that drops down, ram air turbine, and that provides some control, but he slipped that thing all the way and landed in 5,500 feet.
So. Wow. Glided it in a 767 in 5,500 feet. That's amazing. And you attribute that to his stick and rudder skills from flying gliders.
Gliders, yeah.
Well, I probably need to do that.
Yeah. Stick and rudder skills, that's the basic foundation of aviation.
I'm going to steal your cell number off of here. And
please give me a call.
And give you a call, because obviously you're an instructor in that. And you mentioned warbirds for a second. You're a B-17. You're typed in a B-17.
Yes, I was flying two B-17s, the EAA aluminum overcast. Actually, it's in maintenance now due to the carryover spar cracked right here about 4 years ago. And they finally got it at Oshkosh. They tore it all down, so they're going to fix it. And then I used to fly the Memphis Belle, the movie airplane. Back in the 90s, they made the movie about the Memphis Belle. And that's from the Geneseo War Museum out of upstate New York.
Wow.
So
how cool is that?
Amazing airplane. Amazing airplane.
So what would it be like flying B-17s in World War II? Can you imagine?
No. Most of the kids that did it, and I say kids, are 18, 19. Had no concept what was going on. We lost over 55,000 people just in the 8th Air Force in England. There's a 33% chance of coming back.
Yeah, I know that the odds were completely stacked against them. Yeah. And I'm sure that plane's a handful.
It can be a handful. It's built to fly straight and level.
Right.
It's not real good in a crosswind. If you land a 17 in a crosswind, you got to use differential power.
Ah.
So engines 1 and 2, if you have a crosswind from the left, would be at maybe 25 or 30 inches. Engines 3 and 4 would be at idle.
Right.
And it's like a monkey with a greased football.
Wow.
Literally.
That's crazy. And you also fly DC-3s.
Yeah. I fly a DC-3 and a Basler DC-3. Do you know what the Basler DC-3
is? Don't.
That's the new turboprop DC-3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Updated.
Updated, completely redone, made up in Oshkosh, and I flew that on a government contract in South America, and that was a great airplane, great airplane.
So I don't want to miss the fact of your service. You were an Army warrant officer.
Yeah, I was in the Army. I was the first 17th Cav out of Fort Bragg, 82nd Airborne Division. I was an Aero Scout pilot. So the Cav is a unique thing. It's the same thing from, you know, the Civil War, and well, after the Civil War, the cavalry, and it's we have a unique uniform. We at our formal, we can wear a Stetson hat and have a sword. You wear boots, a yellow scarf. You know, tradition at its best.
That's great. I mean, it brings back. And you did that in what aircraft?
OH-58
helicopter.
Yeah. Bell Jet is basically a Bell Jet Ranger.
So that takes me back to Apocalypse Now. I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
That's exactly right. And he had his cab hat on.
Had a Stetson hat on.
Yeah, there you go.
That was you.
So you got to remember now, if you see somebody wearing a Stetson hat, the military guys out here wear it. If he's a warrant officer, the braid has got to be silver. It can't be gold. If he's a regular officer, lieutenant captain, it has to be gold. So the warrant officer is distinct by a silver braid.
Okay.
So you got to, sometimes there's people steal that military stuff and promote it, and they're not even qualified.
Right.
So anyway, so.
So actually you showed me a picture of that. I wish we had that for the audience, because that is a cool picture. I mean,
yeah.
That is a cool uniform.
Yeah. It's
It really is.
Well, thank you.
How long did you do that?
I was on active duty 3 years, and then got off active duty and went into reserves in Houston, Texas. When I was there, and then I had the opportunity at the reserves to do a lot of cool flying, and then we were at San Antonio at Fort Sam on summer camp, and then the call came in, and the first 911 series was a church group in the Guadalupe River was all trapped and flooded out. I was one of the pilots that pulled the kids out of the trees.
Wow.
And we got a little award for that and everything. But that was the first 911 thing with William Shatner.
Yeah, that had to be very rewarding.
Yeah.
They made a movie out of that?
No, it's a 911 series.
Oh, okay.
Back in the 90s, I think.
Series.
William Shatner hosted. So.
Oh.
That was interesting.
Yeah. Did you get to meet him?
No.
So, did you go to Vietnam or anything?
No, didn't. Miss Vietnam.
Miss Vietnam. Well, that's not necessarily, you know. Anyway, let's go on. So with all these ratings, and you're also a DPE,
yep.
Designated Pilot Examiner.
I've been a DPE for about 38 years now.
38 years. Any idea how many pilots you've made?
A lot. But I do.
Oh,
I do airplanes, helicopters, and gliders. And then type ratings and night vision goggles, do night vision goggles certification, military comp, foreign pilot certification. You name it, I do it.
So I guess. I'm so taken back by your...
It's been a great career.
Resume,
really has.
Yes.
It really has.
And so let's stop there at DPE for just a minute, because I know I've been flying about 15 years. I learned a little later in life. Never could afford it before, but I finally could. And I remember sitting with my DPE in preparation for my oral and check ride, and that may be about as nervous as I've ever been in my entire life.
That's common.
Oh, I know.
It has to be. If you're not nervous, you got a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I was, and you know, it was so, you have so much time and money and effort put into it, and I've never failed anything in my life, but I was really concerned about that. What advice would you give to that? Let's start with the private guys, because I think that may be the most scary one.
Just yeah, the two most difficult check rides I've been in my career is the private and the CFI initial.
Okay.
And all it boils down to is knowing the subject matter and the practical test standards or the ACS and being confident in your ability and project that competency. And that's the most important thing. It's not going to be a perfect check ride. You could be the ace of the base in all 3-year training and the day of the check ride really mess up. Or yeah. You could be the worst pilot there is on a day of check ride, you stand out. Because I only have you for maybe 4.5 hours.
Right.
And I have to go by the standards, ask questions, scenarios, and things of that nature. But the most important thing is have that knowledge. It all depends on your instructor, too. If
right.
Your instructor doesn't have a lot of experience, you know, it can prep well. But it's all found in the ACS or the PTS, if it's a glider or a helicopter. And then, you know, all check rides, private through ATP, are basically the same. Everything is right there. You just have to have that knowledge. And then the skill.
And so you said the second hardest one, you think, is your initial CFI.
Initial CFI, yes, it is.
Why?
Involves a lot of stuff.
Oh, I'm sure.
So a lot of people get their private instrument commercial, and then they say, oh, I want to be a flight instructor. But doing their private instrument and commercial, they haven't maintained anything for maybe 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Not looked at anything.
Right.
Now they get this fire hose, and you got to drink out of the fire hose, and it's hard.
Now they got to know it to teach it.
And then, you know, you're a mentor, you're a certification person. You have to certify them, make sure the right endorsements are there. Do they meet the qualifications? Do they try to interpret the FAR or the rule to meet their comfortability? Well, it says cross-country is more than 50 nautical miles. Well, it's not 50 nautical miles. It's more than 50 nautical miles. So then when I look at it, you only have 49 or 50 miles. Well, the other people said it was fine. I said, read the rule. I got to comply what the rule says. And I can't overlook that.
Right. So. All right. So be prepared. Know the rules. And I think be prepared is probably the key. I mean, and I was, and I went right through it. And
very good.
I found the instrument rating, of course, that's more difficult flying. But I found the check ride to actually be a little easier. And I think it's because I had done it once. Right. I'd sat with the DPE at least. After the first one, you kind of know what to expect, right? Now, I was a little less nervous. I was nervous, but a little less nervous.
I understand.
So why did you want to do hot air balloons other than that was probably the only certification you didn't have?
Well, autogyro I want to do too. And okay. It's not that I'm a rating collector. I'm current in all my qualifications on everything. But I am cutting back. The hot air balloon after, you know, 50 some odd years plus, I was a little concerned with a 7 million BTU flame next to fabric. And you're in the air strapped by a bunch of cords at 1,000 feet. Well,
what could go wrong?
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with this picture? However, it is the safest mode of aviation. And balloons started like in 1783.
Is that when they started?
In France. And one of the guys flying it, his name was Pilioto something. That's where the word pilot came from.
Really? Really? Yeah. Okay. Pilioto.
And balloon pilots aren't called pilots. They're argonauts. So there's a lot of tradition that the military brings. For example, why does the pilot sit on the left side of the airplane?
You tell me.
Well, in the CAV, the military guys got on a horse on the left side.
Ah.
That's it. Helicopter pilots sit on the right side. But when Mr. Sikorsky developed the helicopter, there was one collective. It came up in the middle between the seats. Most people are right-handed, So they wanted to fly with the cyclid or the stick, and they use this. So there's a lot of military bearing stuff that falls over to aviation.
So I was getting ready to ask you that very question. Why do the helicopter guys go to the other way? And because the collective is in the middle, and you want to fly the stick with your right hand.
That's correct.
Makes perfect sense. Well, I tell you what, you know, believe it or not, we're about out of time.
Oh, man, that was quick.
It was. I could sit and talk. I'm not kidding. I could sit and talk to you all day long. And I may actually come down to Seminole. It's not that far from me. And jump in a glider and...
If you come, you need to contact me, and I'll put you in touch with the Seminole Lake Gliderport. And then you'll fly with Jan Driesen. Jan is 87 years old. He has 14,000 hours in gliders. He has over 35,000 flights in gliders. And real quick, add-on ratings, usually the failure rate is very low. Well, I've been working with Jan for like 5-7 years now. And I've only had, like, in that amount of time, maybe 3 failures. Well, the FAA called me and says, why is the failure rate is so low? I said, well, it's an add-on. Plus, look who, and once I explained who he is.
Is there a website or anything for that?
Seminole Lake, yes, there is. Yeah, just Google Seminole Lake Gliderport. And if you have any questions, call me.
I got it.
Thank you.
Well, we are slap out of time now. And I am Joel Hargis with the Florida Aviation Network, sitting here with Master Pilot Sean Knickerbocker. If you ever get a chance to meet this guy, shake his hand, talk to him. Guy's got more stories than Carter's got pills, and they're all good ones, I'll tell you, Sean.
Thank you.
This has been an absolute pleasure. Again, Joel Hargis, Sun and Fun 2023. Come check us out.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.